Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to The Coming Out Tapes, an audio archive of LGBT stories. I'm your host, Keris Bradley, and throughout this season, I'll be talking to lots of different people from the community about lots of different things connected to coming out. Correct people on your name, even though you have to do it.
I normally do, but like you're not pronouncing it off at all. So, like you're pronouncing it like the surname probably a little bit, but like it's sounds like my name.
It's so, within two standard deviations.
Yeah.
Alright.
If you're going Metha, I'd be like, no.
Okay. Good to know. So yeah, we're sat in my living room, halfway between Euston and Uxbridge.
Yes.
Thanks so much for giving up your evening to come and talk about all things bi power.
Yes.
Let's call always. It that. Would you like to introduce yourself to the listeners?
Yeah, sure. So, hi everyone. My name is Vineet Mehta. I'm known online as NintendoMad888, literally everywhere you can think of, because I can't get off social media apparently. I work as a software engineer. I am Indian, I'm bisexual, and I don't know what else to say. Cis man, he, him pronounced.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Where did Nintendo Mad 88 come from?
I guess it was at that point where I was like, I clearly need a new email address. I was tired of my old one, which was Aries Brainbox. Equally terrible. And I was like, well, I really love Nintendo. I've been playing it since I was about 3, so I thought that would work, and I was like, okay, Nintendo Mad, and then 8's my favourite number, and I'm one of those people who like things to sort of, like, things in 3's always seem to sound nice, even though I hate the number 3.
Okay.
My brain works on.
You've only got 2 8's.
No, 888.
Ah.
3 8's.
Nintendo Mad 888. Yeah. Okay. Good to know. Cool. So, why the word bisexual? Why do you think that's the best way of describing?
See, for me, I just found the word first. I didn't heard any of these other words until I'd already come out as bisexual. And I was like, oh, I'm attached to it now. I don't want to change it. I can't be bothered. Like, and for me, it means what it means for me. Like, it's more than one gender. And the way I think of gender is probably more closer to the bisexual definition of like, oh, I don't really care about it. So I was just like, yeah, it's fine. I like the word bisexual. I like the colours, which we'll fight over about that.
Yes. The bi... I wouldn't say that I hate them. I just...
A further pan one.
I think I just find them so boring. I think that's why I don't like them.
They look so pretty.
Do they?
Yes.
I have to stop insulting these colours because you have literally had them tattooed on your body. I saw a definition for bisexual the other day, which was someone explaining the difference between bi and pan, and they said that bisexuals are people who are attracted to the same gender as themselves and genders that are different to themselves, normally with a preference.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
I think that's how a lot of people like to define it. I don't think you necessarily need to have a preference though. I think if you're bi, you might use bi because you do have a preference, and you may also not like all the genders. So, you know, if you're a woman, you may not like men, which is perfectly understandable.
When was this decided?
I don't think it was ever really decided. I think people just decided that, oh yeah, people, I'll use that because I have a preference, and then it just kind of caught on. I don't know. But I don't think you necessarily need to have one. I think a lot of people always say usually or you have one, and I'm like, I don't think it's usual or have. It's just, it depends how you want to define it.
I have missed this whole...
Yeah, I see a lot of bi discourse on Twitter a lot, and I'm like, I don't agree with how you're phrasing this, because I don't think it's usually, I think it's just some people do. But you could probably say pan and say you... I guess it's harder to say you're pan and have a preference if you say regardless of gender. But you could. Hmm. I don't know.
Okay.
I think it's up to you.
So that kind of implies that the bisexual preference connection is kind of by default, where like the other definitions for the other words make it harder to say.
Yeah, that's why I don't like it when people go usually or you have one, because I'm like, you don't have to.
Yeah, so it's just that this one, the strict definition and the way that words work mean that you can have a preference.
Yeah, I think so.
And then that's become, you have a preference.
Yeah, which I don't like.
Okay.
But I like the definition of more than one gender, which is the one that Bisexual Index and a lot of other people use.
Cool. So when do you think you first came out to yourself as bisexual?
I didn't come out as bisexual to myself until I came out to someone. For me, it was a moment when I actually vocalised it that felt like I'd come out to myself. I mean, up until that point, I was still pretty much living in denial and finding any excuse to be in denial and just coming up with a reason. Like, oh, I don't like that, so I'm clearly not anything other than straight. So I just constantly found ways to deny myself.
I was going to ask which side of the denial fence were you
sat
on?
Yeah, it was the straight one, yeah. For many, many reasons.
So do you want to talk about the first time that you came out to someone else?
Yeah, so the first time I came out to someone was when I was 24. It's a pretty late bloomer. It was weird. It kind of felt like a New Year's resolution to myself. I kind of got to a point where I was at breaking point, because the reason why I came out was because I fell in love with a straight guy who was my best friend. And I was like, well, I can't deny this anymore. And I kept trying to deny it, and I was hurting myself over it. And then I was like, well, cool, right, it's 2017. I'm going to have to tell someone before I just die. So I asked my friend if they want to meet up, and then went over to their house and spent the whole time not actually saying anything about it and just having a normal conversation and a chat. And then right before I had to leave, they were like, I thought you wanted to chat about something. I just kind of blurted it out.
Did you run away? Did you run away?
No, I blurted it out, and then I just kind of sat there. And they were like, doesn't matter to me. So they were all pretty positive about it. And then I told them about the friend. And they were like, but they're straight. And I was like, I know, I'm suffering. Then I just started slowly coming out over the rest of the year. Year and a half. It took me a while to come out to everyone.
The guy that you were in love with, they still identify as straight?
I'm not friends with them anymore.
Oh, no.
I never came out to them. It's quite a tragic story, which I've put in various places. I came out to them because they're a mutual friend, and then I came out to another mutual friend who then told me that the straight guy I was in love with was talking behind my back and calling me too much. So we had a big argument and we fell out. Then we kind of reconciled it for a little bit, and then it just wasn't working, so it fell apart again. And that year was really rough, because then I fell into a deep state, and then I lost all my other friends because of it. So 2017 2017 was fun.
You can't do the thumbs up to take the edge off what you've just said, because that's not going to work for any of the podcast listeners.
They're I put my thumbs up. I'm taking the edge off.
They're all at home crying, and you're like, no, no, it's fine. It with your facial expression and gestures.
Narrator, it wasn't fine. 2017 was a nightmare.
But, you know, you came out, so...
Which was nice.
It's like when you have a really bad day when you don't achieve anything, but you did, you know, have a shower.
Yeah. Yeah, it was basically that before a whole year.
Yeah, it wasn't a complete write-off.
No. And I'm in a much better place now, which is nice. Like, better than I was before I came out. So, you know, I got over the big trough and I peaked higher than I was before, so that's nice.
That's good. So the first time that you came out to yourself was the first time that you came out to someone else. Why do you think that was?
Homophobia, internalised homophobia, and internalised biphobia as well. So, and then also the culture I grew up in. So I grew up in Southall in West London, which is a very, very Asian area. So they're not very accepting of LGBT+. We just kind of don't talk about anything related to sex or sexuality or anything like that. I had my parents sometimes say they were homophobic comments where, like, my mum would say, you wouldn't like it if your son turned out to be gay, to my sister, when I was still in the closet. So, and, you know, everyone would always say, that's so gay, you're so gay, you know, those phrases. But then there was also the internalised biphobia. So, you know, I knew that I was not straight, I always say, when I was 10. And I always say not straight because I didn't know what bisexual was. And I didn't learn what bisexual was until I was 17. And when I found out what bisexual was, it's because someone came out as bi-curious. And my friend told me and then immediately laughed about it and said, who is she kidding? If she's gay, why did she just say it? And I immediately... It kind of put a light bulb in my head, but then immediately the light bulb was smashed. Because it was like, well... Can't be that, because clearly it doesn't exist. And I didn't want to be gay either, but it also, gay didn't make sense to me. So I just kept going, I'm straight, and it just got harder and harder. But I found ways to deny it. So I was like, well, I like those men, but I just want to be them, was the first step. Then it was, I'm sexually attracted to them, but all men are trash. So I don't want to be in a relationship with a man. So I found that way to deny myself until I fell in love with my street best friend. And then I denied it for another year or 9 months or so because I just didn't want to admit it.
So in terms of the mechanics of, like, actually coming out to someone else, and that was also the time that you kind of came out to yourself, do you think that there was something in having to... like, say it to someone? Because I think so some people, you know, they'll say it to themselves, or that's like looking in the mirror and saying it, or yeah. They'll like say it in their head. Do you think that there was something deliberate about the fact that you had to say it to another person?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, it's one of those things where I would say it in my head, but I would put other voices in my head would shut it down. And until I actually vocalised it to someone else, it became real. So the second I did that, it became real. Mm-hmm. And it was that point that I felt like I'd come out to myself, because I can't take it back now that I've said it, right? I could just shove myself back in the closet, but what sense would that be? Mm-hmm. So once I finally said it out loud, I was like, well, that's done now.
Yeah.
And it kind of silenced the other voices, because it's like, well, I said it, so...
Yeah. So, do you have any other, like, memorable coming out stories?
Good or bad?
Well, either.
I think one of my favourite ones was when I told my friend, and I told my friend just before her stop on the tube, and she didn't really know what to say, and she just kind of went, okay. And I kind of looked at her, and she was like, what do you want, a medal? Which kind of just made me laugh. And she was just like, oh, I don't...
you know, I don't care. Like, I don't know why I'm supposed to give you hair. And after she texted me and was like, I'm so sorry about that. I just didn't know what to say about Vinit. I don't care. Like, you're Vinit. It doesn't matter. But, so that was really nice. But also just, it cracked me up. So.
Has she since got you a medal?
No, which I should really ask her for one. I'd be like, yes, I want a medal.
But also, like, how perfect would that birthday or Christmas present be?
Right?
We like, guys are coming up with. Yeah.
But my memorable bad one is very bad because it's an instant where I didn't actually get to come out. Because, so when I was coming out, I was using Twitter as a safe space because I needed to say my thoughts out loud and I needed to find people and interact with people. And actually is what formed a lot of my friendships now, because I found community groups that I then made friends from, which I wouldn't have found otherwise. But it became a point where, so I was talking on Twitter about a lot of this stuff, and when I told my mum, I put that on Twitter, and a week later my mum told me that my dad already knew, and my dad confronted her and was like, I know you know because it's on his Twitter. Now my dad does not use Twitter. My dad does not use social media at all. So this was a really bizarre moment, but my mum told me that the story was he was online at work and his colleagues were saying that he should go on social media, and he decided to check out Twitter and found me, which I found a little bit bizarre because I didn't really have a following at all back then. Fast forward a few months and there was some argument going on in the house, and my sister finds out that the reason my dad knew was because my extended family had outed me. And my extended family were on my Twitter and they had shown the Twitter to my dad. Now, I was already not talking to my dad for unrelated reasons. And I now no longer talk to my extended family at all. But yeah, I haven't asked my dad how he found it or anything. So I have no idea how he took it. I live with him, but I don't know how he took it. But the thing that was really sad about that was I didn't get to tell my brother either, because during this whole argument, my brother found out and I was trying to muster up the courage to say it to both him and his wife. And I just never got the chance, which is kind of sad.
Why do you think that it is sad that you didn't get the chance to?
Because it was a thing with me and my brother, we never used to get on. And we were kind of reconciling that over the last couple of years. Like, we were getting a little bit closer. We were doing certain things, like, you know, birthday gifts and stuff like that. So we were getting to that point, and, you know, I went to their wedding the year before, and, a bit before, and it just would have been nice to just tell my own brother and kind of have that moment with him and talk to him about all of the stresses that I experienced when we were younger and just have that nice chat. I just never got that chance. He just found out. I mean, I did get a really lovely, lovely text from him when he found out. He sent me like a massive wall of text and was like, I love you, I support you. And it was really nice. It's just a shame that that's the way it had to come down to it. That it was a nice text around all of the anger about the fact that my extended family had done that. So yeah, that's my really sad moment.
At least there were some silver linings, I guess.
Yeah, there were.
Did you say that you live with your parents?
Yeah, so I still live at home in Uxbridge with my parents. My sister's just moved out with her to-be husband, and my brother is currently doing up his house so he can move out with his wife. Soon it'll just be me and my parents, but yeah, I live at home.
And now you're out?
Yes.
Is that you don't have to talk about it if you...
No, it's kind of a mixed bag. When I came out to my mum, she took it better than I thought, but obviously it isn't as lovely as some people's stories. You know, they'd be like, oh yeah, my mum hugged me and my mum said I love you. My mum did say that, but she said, I'm not happy. Because she had a bit of a shocked face on her when I told her. And I asked her, do you hate me? And she was like, I don't hate you, but I'm not happy about it. And then she did give me a hug. And she is slowly trying to learn all of the stuff. She did come to Bi Pride to see me at a panel, which I wasn't expecting. I kind of just asked her to see what she would say, and I didn't expect her to say no because of bye-bye, but that would probably be one of the reasons, but she wouldn't say it out loud. I expected her to just be like, no, I don't want to travel all the way to Hackney, I don't want to be in a massive crowd, blah blah blah, But actually, she met all of my friends. She told me how much she enjoyed the panel. She gave me a big hug and told me well done. So, like, really, actually, she's really getting there. She's being really supportive about it. But still don't talk to my dad, so I still don't know. It's been a couple of years now, so I have no idea.
Sounds stressful.
It's less stressful than talking to him.
Okay.
Like, a lot of people say, when I say I don't talk to my dad, they say that must be really hard to manage. And I was like, if you knew what it was like talking to him, you'd realise how much easier it is. It takes so much stress out of it, because me and my dad had a terrible relationship. So not talking to him kind of saves me from all of that toxicness, I guess.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So when you found out that there were people, so you went to Twitter for this kind of like safer space, and then you found out that there were people who were kind of making that space not safe anymore. Was there anything that you like were able to do to try and reclaim that space?
As in what, when LGBT plus spaces aren't safe, do you mean?
Well, so like in your specific experience, you had this Twitter and then there were people who were following you.
Like, yeah. I just didn't do anything. I was just like, well, now everyone knows. So what is there to say? I did rant a few times and was like, get the hell off my Twitter. And then every time I rant about telling them to get off my Twitter, my dad gets a phone call from them. And then he starts ranting at my siblings about it. And I'm like, get off my Twitter. But no, I just was like, well, you all know now, so I'm just going to carry on being open and loud about it.
Mm.
Which was nice.
So, final question of this portion of the interview. Not the final question. I have so many more questions that I would like to ask you. What does coming out mean to you?
So for me, I think initially when I was first coming out, it was acceptance. It was accepting myself. When I say acceptance, I'm not from other people. Just accepting myself, being authentic to myself, being true to myself, and living my life. Now, when I come out, it's about being visible and being loud about being visible so I can help other people. So every time I talk about my coming out story or I mention the fact that I'm bi, it's very much to make that awareness that there is LGBT plus in this space that we find ourselves, so that other people feel comfortable being out as well. And it, you know, when I wrote my coming out story and I posted it online, for me, it got a lot of hits. Like right now, it's sitting at 600 views, which for me is a lot. But at one point, I think I got like 250 or something. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't expect these kind of numbers. I hope they helped some people. And one person replied to me and was just like, actually, I read your blog and then came out to my parents afterwards. And I was like, how did it go? And they're like, really well. I did it when I was drunk, but it was fine. And I just started crying because I just didn't expect that at all. So now it's, after that, I was like, yeah, it's about being visible, which is what coming out is for me now.
So you do a lot of visibility kind of stuff.
Yeah, especially because I feel like it's really hard to be seen with all of my different identities. You know, you very rarely see Indian queer men at all, let alone, and you barely see bisexual men. Like, we all know the statistics where things like 12% of bisexual men are out of their family. So it's ridiculously low. And when you put those two together, it kind of makes a double whammy of, like, you basically don't exist. And, you know, you go into various spaces and you constantly find yourself not fully accepted. So I kind of just want to keep shouting about it to be like, hi, yes, I am Indian. I'm also queer. I'm also bi. I'm out here. We exist. And hopefully some people will, hopefully people are listening and see it because it'll help them.
Could you give the listeners like a very quick rundown of all of the kind of...
Yes, I can
like
try.
Either activism or visibility kind of stuff that you do?
Yes. So I guess the first thing I did was start a blog. So I have a blog on Medium. Again, NintendoMad888. I'm very easy to find. One of the blogs I then improved on, and it's in a book called The Bible New Testimonials, which is published by Monstrous Regiment, who are based in Scotland.
I'm pretty sure they're based in Discworld.
That too. And then after that, I was in a few photoshoot campaigns for Prepster. If you don't know Prepster, search them up, because I don't have the time to explain all the amazing things they do. The same people also made another group called Long Time No Syphilis, which is self-explanatory. And I did a campaign with them. I recently did a campaign for GMFA, which stands for Gay Men Fighting AIDS, and it was around South Asian gay and bisexual men.
Are you like the poster boy for safe sex?
I think so at this point. I'm basically the poster boy for safe sex and HIV prevention, which is weird. I'm kind of following in Phil Samba's footsteps, who was the original poster boy, and still is, really. And then I've done a few presentations on bisexuality. I was on a panel at Bi Pride. I also am part of a film group who are making a documentary around queer people of colour. I think that's everything at this point. I've probably missed a couple of things, but there's a lot.
What kind of stuff do you talk about in the presentations?
So the presentations that I made was around bi visibility. So I made it because I got an opportunity from someone I know who works at Thames Water. And since our company makes a billing system for utility companies, it kind of lined up nicely. So my work gave me the day off, and it was on bi visibility day. I went to Thames Water to give a presentation around what is bi visibility day. So I kind of touch on a little bit of who I am, what I do, and then mention a little bit about being Gaysian and proud, because that's always a topic I need to highlight in. And then I go fully into bi visibility, and I talk about all of the... I basically go through misconceptions that we hear. So I basically just have a slide which just has a question on it that we get asked. The first one I start with is the one I always get asked first, which is, which one do you like more, men or women? And I just break it down to just how many problems there are with it. Firstly, it says men or women, which is already a problem. And then I just kind of go through it, and I just talk about how it's rooted in biphobia, bi-erasure, basically trying to explain what those are. And then I talk about the difficulties of being bi. So I show them some lovely statistics that are from Stonewall's reports. I say lovely, they're grim statistics about how we're more likely to have suicidal thoughts, commit self-harm, be depressed or anxious or homeless, live below the poverty line. I touch a little bit on bisexual migrants and how they get sent home as well. And then I just explain what we can do better, so by inclusive policies and, you know, not assuming people's gender and sexuality and all of that sort of stuff.
So why do you think that it's useful to have that as like a separate conversation, as opposed to, for example, like talking about kind of the LGBTQI plus community as a whole?
I think it's useful as a separate conversation because we experience separate difficulties. There are difficulties that we face that gay people and lesbian people are not going to face. They might experience difficulties from us as well, but we get that extra layer. We still experience homophobia. That doesn't go away. I've had fag thrown at me. I've had batty boy and stuff like that. I have all of these words thrown at me that are rooted in homophobia. But then anytime I talk to someone about being bi, they will evade me or they'll avoid me. So it's that extra layer on top of it. And it's a layer that isn't talked about. And it's exactly what is causing all of the problems in the bi community. Because when you're bisexual, you want to go to an LGBT plus space. And then when even LGBT plus people are telling you you don't exist, where are you supposed to go to be safe, right? I was in an LGBT plus bar with an LGBT plus community. And I was having a conversation with a fellow bi person who said, I feel like a bad bi because my sexual experiences are like 90-10, 90 towards men. And I was like, I've never had sex with a woman, so what's the big deal? And immediately a gay person's ears twitched and turned around and was like, so how do you know? So I was like, you're asking me that? You? So it just creates this really unsettling atmosphere with being bi. Is just fitting into this box that no, like, you're in between two worlds where neither world wants you, essentially. The straight world doesn't want you, the LGBT plus world doesn't want you, because it's dominated by gay people. So I think it's really important to discuss that issue.
And how's the reception of the talks been?
Really positive, actually. So I've given three so far. It was the same presentation each time because they were kind of back to back. And so I gave it at Thames Water, and then I gave it at my own place of work, which wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the Thames Water one, because I just mentioned to them I want to do this thing. And they were like, yeah, cool, do it here too, which was really positive. And then I did it at the Thames Valley LGBT plus network. And every single time I've got people going, that was really interesting, it was really informative, I learned something. I thought that was really interesting coming from the LGBT plus network, because everyone in the room was some form of queer, like they were all part of the community, and they were all like, I didn't realise it was like that, I didn't know that was a problem. So that was, it's been really good, been really good reception.
So is the plan to do more kind of talks?
I do really want to. I mean, I feel like if I had to, I would have to justify it more to work. Because obviously this time I could be like, oh, it's, you know, vested interest, because one day you might be able to work with Thames Valley and they'll know me. But, Thames Water, rather. But I don't know if they'll allow me to just take time off too much anyway. But, I mean, if I get an opportunity, I'm definitely going to be like, hey, can I get another day off, and see what they say? Because I would love to. It's really fun.
So if someone is listening and they're like, what we need is a bi-focused talk at my place of work, how would they get in touch?
I think the best place to get in touch with me is Twitter. I'm literally, you message me on Twitter, I reply within 5 minutes. Someone's like, Jesus, like, they're trying to write multiple messages. And I'm like, nope, I'm replying straight away. So definitely Twitter. If you Google my name or my Twitter handle, NintendoMad88, as I said about three times, which is perfect. if you Google that, you will find everything I'm on. So just message me through one of those and I will probably see it.
You mentioned the documentary project or the film project.
Yes.
What's the kind of timeline for that?
We're looking at getting it out the door early next year.
So we're recording this in October 2019, but it is probably coming out early 2020. So pretend like it's coming out,
yeah,
and do a thing.
Okay, so it's coming out, and basically the documentary is focused on queer people of color. So we have four main people. We have a non-binary person called Farhan Khan. We have me. We have my director, Blaze. And we have my friend, Manpreet. So I am a person who's already out and talking about my struggles of trying to find a place where I can really, truly fit as a person who is from many different worlds. My friend, Manpreet, is someone who isn't out and is trying to find themselves. We have my director, who is out, and he's gay, but he's works in a film production. It's his own charity, it's his own group, but he's never done anything that he feels is truly his own identity reflected. And then we have Farhan Khan. They are part of the protests that are up in Birmingham. So they identify as queer and Muslim. And so they are constantly fighting against all of the protests that are happening up in Birmingham around LGBT plus education. And so we touch around a lot of these different things around the linking of identities and the problems it can cause. We highlight stuff like UK Black Pride, Pride in London, Bi Pride. We did quite a bit of filming there. We filmed my panel. We filmed Farhan's panel at Black Pride. So we're really just trying to highlight what it means to be a queer person of colour and a lot of that kind of stuff.
Do you know what the release is going to be? Like, if people are going to be able to...
I don't know yet, actually, because we're right now... We finished production last month and we're now in post-production, and I think we are really hoping to get it into film festivals and really, really hoping to get it into BFI Flare.
Yeah.
But this is a massive hope that may not happen. So, you know, if you see us in BFI Flare when this comes out, it happened, people. And other than that, we're hoping to probably put it online, so I'll probably end up being on Amazon Prime, probably. The most likely place we'll put it.
Well, we'll make sure that we'll put all the useful information embedded into the thing. Okay, is there anything else that you wanted to...
I don't think so, no.
No? All right, just before we go, would you like to describe your tattoo to the...
Yes. So I have a very lovely tattoo, which is the front cover of the Bible Volume 2, and Volume 1, actually. And it basically looks like paint swatches, I think is the word for them. It's basically like two paint smears. One of them's pink, one of them's blue, and then in the middle, when they mix together, it makes purple, which is the bi-colours. And it was very beautifully designed by someone called Hannah, who works for Monstrous Regiment. And I'm not the only person who has this tattoo, actually. One of the other authors got it first. Yeah, so it was like a little thing on Twitter where we were joking around and being like, we should all get tattoos, and some people were pretty actually serious about it. And I was like, oh, I don't know, I've never had a tattoo, maybe not, but it sounds like a cool idea. And then one of the people, Rob, just got it done and was just like, hey, your turn. And I was like,
looks like quite a painful first.
Yeah, it was.
That part of the arm, like the flesh, that's a really painful place to get it done.
Yeah, so it's in my bicep, it's in the inner part of my right bicep. And yeah, when I spoke to the tattoo artist, like whilst they were doing it, said to me, you know, you picked the worst place on your arm to get it done. And I was like, sounds about right, it's painful.
Because one of my tattoos, it sort of starts on, it's on this arm, it like starts on the back, like the kind of like where you've got the muscle on the back of your arm, and then it comes all the way into the kind of fleshy bit on the bicep. And the like difference in pain, it's more pain, but it's also a completely different pain. Like, it really feels like someone's taking a scalpel to your arm. And yours is completely coloured in as well.
Yeah, so was yours coloured?
Unrelentless. No, so mine's that bit, so it's the wing of a bat, is the bit over the painful bit, so it's like...
Ooh, that's pretty.
But so all of the colouring in is kind of shading.
Yeah.
And the tattoo artist who did it for this bit was really excited because she got a new needle, which is like... had like a head of like 12 needles in a block to do it, so the shading was actually quite quick, but it was really like the kind of the outline, like it really felt like it was
For me, the colouring in was the worst part because it was
so much of it,
like it's just all coloured in, and he was just doing it in like rotary, like round and round and round, and I was just like, I was obviously like, this is fucking awful. And then the tattoo artist was like, yeah, you picked the worst part, and plus, right now I have got 18 needles against your arm. And I was like, that would explain the pain.
Yeah. I think I had to, like, I pretended that I had to go to the toilet like 5 times while she was doing this part of the tattoo to go take those breaks. So bad.
I didn't take a single break. I think it took an hour and a half, so it wasn't too bad. But I was just like, just get it done, just get it over, because if I take a break, I'm not going to come back. I'm just going to leave.
And then you would just have like the pink part, and it would just be completely the wrong message.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, there we go. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
I'm sure my 20 or so listeners will probably already follow you on Twitter. I imagine they have quite a big crossover, so I can't promise you any new fans, but hopefully someone will hire you to come give a really cool bisexual presentation.
That'd be amazing.
A presentation about bisexuality.
I mean,
it'll also be
very bisexual.
Listening to this episode of The Coming Out Tapes. I have been your host, Keris Bradley, and I would like to say thanks to Scary Boots for the artwork, which is available to purchase on Redbubble, Michaela Moody for the music, and Alex Lathbridge of the Smart Material Collective for his support of the project. If you want to get involved, please tweet at us, as we'd love to hear your thoughts, comments, and questions. If you liked this episode, subscribe and leave us a review or recommend us to a friend, because it makes a big difference.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.